Hi, this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I represent the political center and have on the political left, Shireen Gorbani. Hi, Shireen.
Hello, and hey to the listeners. Special shout out to Olivia, who I just met, who's a regular listener.
Gotta love that. We also have our state auditor, John Dougal, on the right. Hi, John.
Hey, great to be with you. And I guess I need to meet Olivia.
Hey, I'm gonna start us out global today, everyone, and let's go to China. Why not? I mean, President Biden, after really unexpectedly successful election results, got on Air Force One and headed to the east, and he gets a meeting with the president of China, Xi Jinping. And I always think it's better, John, when we're engaging. I always think it's better when we're talking. What did you make of the news coverage that you saw?
Well, it's one of those things where I think it was good to meet, talk through things. I think there was fear that certain issues were escalating between the U.S. and China, especially about Taiwan. It looks like he has smoothed some ruffled feathers there. He talks about it's not imminent for China to do any kind of provocative attack on Taiwan, which I think that's a very good thing. It doesn't look like he's misspoke or put his foot in his mouth like he's done on a few times in regards to China and Taiwan. And so those are good. I generally agree with you, Natalie. When we're talking, that's a much better situation than when we're not talking or when we're engaging in other dangerous activities.
Yeah, yeah. Shireen, I don't know what you made of it, but to me it's so interesting when you take someone who really represents open and free trade, democratic government, universal human rights, collective security through NATO and the like, and then you put him in the room with someone who's really has autocratic rule and believes that capitalism is evil.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly an interesting dynamic on that front. I would say from an environmental perspective, certainly you would have much more to say, I'm guessing, from an economic perspective. Our relationship with China is critical, and understanding that that is a place where we can have progress, where we can find agreement, even through some pretty strained moments and high points of disagreement, I think is absolutely better for the world, right? If we can be working towards human rights instead of against them, if we can be thinking about economic stability instead of more disruption, if we can be thinking about addressing climate change as opposed to being at odds. So I don't know, what else would you add? Are you looking for anything to come out of a meeting like this?
Well, I guess my biggest thing is that if we're talking, the lines of communication are open. And when something really tough happens, like let's say tactical nuclear event in Ukraine, I think it's so good if our president and the president of China have been talking. So, yeah, it's a good. Hey, so another thing. So we're friends. And throughout the week, sometimes John will text me, Shireen will text me. John, I got a text from you the minute we learned about the missile that landed in Poland. So let's break that down for listeners. This is still a live news story, but it looks like that this missile was likely launched by Ukraine to defend against Russian missiles. Am I getting that right?
That's the latest that I've heard.
Yeah, but it killed two people. And
In Poland.
And, of course, a member of, the pact, the NATO pact. And we, it caused a lot of consternation, Shireen.
That's right. So these are, I think, those moments where, as you're suggesting, being in conversation is critical and can really turn the tides as opposed to being at odds. And so it sounds like, I mean, initially, I think that the report was that this was a Russian strike that ended up in Poland. And now the reports are that it was, in fact, a Ukrainian missile. And I guess I just have to say the part that's really stuck with me through this story is just how persistent, how devastating this conflict is in Europe. This is in Europe. And it is, I don't know where we find resolution, but it sounded like there were some movements on that front as well in terms of the president of Ukraine kind of outlining what peace could look like. But it feels like this situation just we've said this for months now. It feels like we're constantly on the brink of just incredible escalation. So I don't know, John, what was your read on the situation?
Well, when so many people were saying they thought it was a Russian missile attack, I guess I was grateful that people didn't respond more aggressively, assuming things, and they were looking to see what the facts were and what the situation was and what led to it and whether it was intentional or accidental. But, you know, to put myself in the shoes of the Ukrainians, to see the devastation that's going on there, you know, watching people walking down the street or other things like that and seeing bombs in the not so far away distance from them, you know, pretty close, just exploding and erupting. And it's like they're going on with their everyday life. It's just, I can't imagine the devastation they're going through. And they start to gain ground in some areas. They push back the Russian troops in one area, and then Kyiv just gets bombed and bombed and bombed, and, you know, utilities are knocked out and other things like that. It's just a horrific situation. And, you know, like we said, this is Putin's war. This isn't the Russian people. I don't believe this is Putin's war. Mm-hmm. And this unfortunate situation would not have happened but for Putin's war.
I have been doing a bit of traveling, which means you get to do a lot of reading. And I found myself taking the latest edition of Foreign Affairs with me. If you don't
a little
read,
light reading.
Well, I'm telling you, if you don't read that magazine, it's terrific. But it had an incredible article on Russia's decline. It had a diplomat who had defected from the Kremlin, and he gave an analysis of Russian misconduct. It had a great article on American power and this competition, and you know, between ideas of an autocratic society versus a free society. So I'll give a big shout out to that for our listeners. Let's do another international. The COP27, the climate change meetings, I believe they're in Egypt right now. John yep. Curtis.
Well,
John-
just wrapped up, I think.
Just finished. Shireen, John Curtis was there. He is a founder, co-founder of the Conservative Climate Caucus. I heard a radio interview he gave where he said he met with John Kerry over at COP27. He said it was the first time that John Kerry had met with the Conservative Climate Caucus. I'm like, well, there's some good conversations going then.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So I think listeners will not be surprised that, of course, I'm constantly frustrated with our complete Republican representation at the congressional level. But I do have to say that John Curtis, to me, feels like such a serious and thoughtful lawmaker when it comes to especially the issue of climate. I'm so grateful to see his leadership on this issue and to really understand that I feel like we're getting closer and closer to the world where this is not a partisan issue. Of course, every time mm-hmm. I say that, I'm surprised by some new, I would say, right-wing talking point that undermines that. But it feels like if you live in reality, you understand that we are in a situation where we have to have lots of different tactics, solutions, and strategies when it comes to the climate crisis. And I'm grateful that he's leading on this.
Yeah. John, give us a little bit of color commentary from the right on, you know, for some, you might think it's politically risky for him to be embracing climate. But at the same time, he's been able to get a seat at the table and to make conservative points about innovation, about the power of markets to help solve this problem, and to focus really on reducing emissions rather than reducing energy choices. You know, think common sense things that I think a lot of Republicans talk about, but a lot of Democrats don't know about.
Yeah. So the very first thing is the minute he says the word climate, all of a sudden the hackles of a bunch of conservatives or a bunch of Republicans go up because this issue has been, I'll say, co-opted by the left. And so he's injecting himself on something that's historically been viewed as a left issue. Mm-hmm. And this last year, as he's been running for re-election, he's been making the case of how we need to have a balanced approach, how we can be sensitive to the environment. At the same time, we can still deal with drilling and extraction industries, and how he's made the case, and the data seems to show that when we do it in the U.S., when we extract oil and natural gas in the U.S., we do it significantly cleaner from a greenhouse gas perspective than when it takes place in other countries. Mm-hmm. And so he points to the fact that we can have energy independence, we can have multiple sources of energy, we can do it sensitively to the environment in a balanced approach, which I think is an important message that Republicans need to engage on. We can disagree about how to exactly go about it,
or
but
how
we should all be caring about how to care for the environment, the world in which we're going to live in, and our kids and our grandkids.
Let's do one final global issue because it deals with our borders. But we had a U.S. judge block Title 42. This is the statute where millions of migrants have been expelled because they have been in a country with a communicable disease. It sort of has, you know, a lot of COVID ties. But it looks like the Biden officials extended this policy over and over again, and now we've got a ruling that stems from a lawsuit from the ACLU and basically says no more. John?
Yeah, so I think this judge was, if you will, going way back, a Reagan appointee out of the District of Columbia. And I think part of the dynamic, as I read it and where I see it, is folks have been playing a game with Title 42. It's like, okay, I understand when we had the pandemic and its use then, but when we've said the pandemic is gone and yet we still continue to pretend like it's there, to me, it seems like we're playing both sides of the fence. And I think this has been the case, unfortunately, for both sides of the aisle.
Yeah, it's
not
Trump
just
and
on
Biden.
Title 42, but immigration. I want us to have a reasonable, rational immigration policy. I think immigration is good for our country. I think it makes sense for us to know who's coming and going, but we need to have a much wider legal pathway for those that want to come live, work, and build a better life.
Shireen, this is somewhere where I think you could get Republican and Democratic agreement.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you've got it on this show.
Yeah, for sure. And I think of Ronald Reagan's famous speech about the city on the hill where he said, if you're going to have walls, make sure they have gates, big, wide open gates.
Yeah, so, that's right.
Anything more on that, Shireen?
I would just very much echo what John just said. I think that if you have never made a call to your congressional representation, maybe give a call and say you would like to see some productive, lawful, reasonable action on immigration. If we have a divided government, maybe this is the time to get it done. That's deeply wishful thinking, but you know what? Let's put some pressure on and see some movement.
Shireen's the eternal optimist right there.
You got to love it.
Yep.
Hey, I'm Natalie Gochner with Shireen Gourbani and John Dougal. Stay tuned in our next segment. We're going to talk about this new candidate for president. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
Shireen Gourbani on the left.
John Dougal. On the right.
Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and we have a new candidate for president. All right. So just to set this up, John and Shireen, I'm flying home from D.C. last night. I'm thinking I'm going to watch a movie, you know, 4 or 5 hour flight. But I remember that Donald Trump is going to make his big announcement. So I decided to watch live TV and just watch the announcement like I'm watching a movie. And so I watched the whole thing.
I mean, there's some sacrifices I make for the show, but that's not one of them.
Okay. I was a captive audience, and I just sat there, and I would watch Fox, and then I would watch CNN, and I just kept rotating back and forth. And so, anyway, I'm prepared to have this conversation if you guys want to ask me questions, but the main thing that I pick up, I mean, there's so much to go to, but nobody carried his speech the whole time. It was so long, pretty much low energy, that not even Fox kept their cameras on him for the whole speech. I thought that was quite telling, Shireen.
So I agree, quite telling. I feel like my favorite tweet was breaking. Donald Trump, who tried to overthrow the results of the 2020 presidential election and inspired a deadly riot at the Capitol in a desperate attempt to keep himself in power, has filed to run for president in 2024. That's NPR, not a joke. You would think that's The Onion. It feels so unreal.
I told you, it's like a movie.
That is NPR. It's like a movie.
I know.
And also, you know, I guess I'm just curious. I, of course, am always interested in the fact checkers. Like, sounds like this was kind of the usual falsification of history. What stood out to you as some of the main themes of the speech?
You know, I mean, the main theme was it was all about him. It's all about him. The glorious,
always has been.
Yeah, the glorious economy during his time, the incredible, you know, battle that we put up on COVID. He made fun of Biden for, you know, calling Cambodia, Colombia. you know, and it was, there was a lot of name calling. And
At least you didn't call it Canada.
Yeah. If I had to pick a theme, it would mostly be everything. I had everything so good and now it's terrible and you need me again.
Yeah.
John?
Well, I was going to actually also ask with your work in the Dignity Index, you know, just kind of a feel for where this falls in terms of elevating our public discourse to the body politic. What's your sense on that?
Oh, I mean, it was low yeah. on the Dignity Index. Yeah. Well, because it's calling people names and it's
false.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
Lots of, I mean, he said things about the economy and that's my area. So I'm just like, well, that's not true. And then you start thinking of the areas you don't have depth in, how many lies are there? So that's just my opinion. John, I want to hear your impression on the speech, but I also want you to tell us the backstory of these 100 Utah elected officials that signed a letter basically encouraging Florida Governor Ron DeSantis to explore challenging Trump for the GOP nomination in 2024. So take it from there, John.
Yeah, so Dan McKay and Todd Weiler, both state senators, Friday night sent out a message to a whole bunch of elected officials saying, hey, would you like to join us on this? And it was basically, I think the sense of us was, we're not really interested in Trump running again. Been there, done that, too much baggage. Todd Weiler described, I want a winning, there's too much losing going on. And so clearly Ron DeSantis had a fantastic win in Florida, a 20-point win against a well-known challenger. There are many policy issues that I think we all appreciate. And so we signed on to a letter calling for him to form an exploratory committee to consider running for president. Timing-wise, clearly we wanted to get out there early to call for him to express the concern that many of us in Utah do not want a retread running for president.
Has this gotten national news, John?
I don't know about that. I know it's gotten news here in Utah.
I was, when I heard this was going down, and you know, I know you signed the letter. We have a lot of our
state representatives, senators,
Mike Schultz,
mayors,
Evan Vickers,
some city council members, some county commissioners, and other county elected officials.
Yeah, Dan McKay, someone that this audience knows well, and you signed it. But Shireen, I thought that this would get more national news than it appears to have gotten, just from what I've seen.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, I, of course, take note because I think Ron DeSantis, though I can understand as a person who seems to win elections, may be preferable to somebody like Donald Trump, is a person who thinks it's a good idea that we force teachers to declare their political affiliation before they start teaching in the classroom. This is a person who's passed very harmful legislation to trans kids. When we think about the LGBTQ community, moving towards a total ban, near total ban on abortion in his state. So this is not a person who I think is an inspiring leader. And in fact, I think is a person who kind of falls back into the same trap of a cult to personality that I feel like I've seen for too many years Republicans go down the path on. So I'm disappointed to see this letter come forward, though I understand the desire to move away from Trump. What I would love to see is really a party that is moving forward with ideas that are part of a healthier dialogue about where we're going as a country, as opposed to these kind of deeply hot button political, I would say kind of talking points that have been fired up on the right. I will say, though, I think that there's something absolutely bonkers about this starting this early. And I also have to say, it's going to be disappointing to see
all the seats haven't even been called yet.
That's right. And probably when Trump defies all odds and is the presidential nominee, I'm guessing we'll see a bunch of these individuals fall in line, just like Republicans tend to do all the time. So I'm disappointed by this strategy. I find it disheartening. But I mean, I guess try anything. Utah Democrats are known for doing that, too.
Shireen, do you think this is a turning point for Donald Trump, or do you think too early to tell?
Too early to tell, but I don't think you should ever count him out.
Yeah. How about you, John?
I hope the writing's on the wall. When you look at the outcome of the last election, the shellacking that his candidates took, I know he's trying to say his true candidates won and those that didn't follow his advice lost. I don't buy that.
Yeah.
I also look at how And I have disagreements with Mitch McConnell and have concerns there, but I watch how he tried to funnel money in to help Republican candidates and how little it seemed like, how much Trump seemed to be raising relative to how little he seemed to be putting into those races and stuff. And so, but going to the point Shireen said, this is one of my complaints too often about the Republican Party in D.C. While they're in the opposition, too often they have lacked what is their policy. And so Senator Scott, whether you like him or not, at least he was putting forth a proposal of a set of policies that he thought the Republicans should champion.
Now, like I want cutting, a vigorous like debate Medicare. Of, yeah.
I want a bunch of policies out there with us debating what they are.
Yeah. I appreciate that about you, John.
Yeah. I wrote down a couple of quotes, just get your reaction. Mike Pompeo, people think he's going to run for president, but he said, we need more seriousness, less noise. Mitt Romney said, President Trump has lost three in a row, and if we want to start winning, we need a new leader. No surprise, come from Romney. But then Mike Pence, Shireen, said, I think there's a real desire for new leadership. And watching Pence, you know, he's got his book that's come out. He's done an interview, on CNN this week, a town hall. What do you make of this guy?
I just don't think there's a Mike Pence constituency. I agree with him, but I feel like we're in a real quagmire. This is bad. I'm disappointed and I'm worried.
Interesting. Okay. So,
well, I want to read one of Mike Pence's quotes. It doesn't take courage to break the law. It takes courage to uphold the law. I mean, the president's words were reckless. It was clear he decided to be part of the problem. And I agree with that. And you look at now the additional information we have about what the threats on Mike Pence on January 6th and how he sheltered there in the Capitol building, but he did not want to give any appearance that the vice president was fleeing the Capitol building on the day he was supposed to do his constitutional duty.
He comes out looking pretty good.
And I applaud him for upholding his constitutional duty.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, so now, John, we have, we now know that the House, there's 218 seats now for the Republicans. We know Kevin McCarthy has been elected the speaker-elect. There'll be another vote to come out where he has to get the full amount that he needs.
So he's the Republican nominee for speaker. And yes, the whole body has to elect him.
So what can we expect? What's going to, we got a shift. What can we expect?
What we can expect is some jockeying for more control in terms of how the House is run. And I'm going to say the control they want is control from the members of the body and not as much tightly held by the Speaker as has historically been the case. You're going to see some investigations. Now, I hope there's serious investigations about areas of concern within the operation of government and not antics. But we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah. Shireen, I remember being a political appointee in an administration where you know that the clock starts in your first 2 years to get things done. And then you know the last 2 years are going to be all about investigations. It's really not healthy. Just
I agree.
My opinion. Yeah.
Sounds like a correct read.
Shireen, do you want to say anything more about the Republicans taking over the House?
I would just say this incredibly narrow win, to me, I think provides an interesting landscape. Will we see then some desire to show that they actually can lead, that they can provide ideas that matter to everyday working people in this country? Or is it going to be an absolute circus? So I feel like it's going to be tough, but I'm curious to see how it goes.
Yeah. Well, when Shireen talks about tight, if you look at the history, I think every day of the last year, there was somebody missing because they were sick, they had died, other things like that. I think all but 1 month, somebody had died. So when you talk about a tight margin, it's really tight margin. People are joking about having doctors on call just to make sure everybody stays healthy, just to hold the majority together.
Yeah. Shireen, John, one more issue I want to talk about, this surplus up on Capitol Hill. So state government now, we're talking about a $1.4 billion surplus. Looks like, Shireen and John, there's going to be a tax cut proposed. They're going to go for the income tax. That's where all the money is. Shireen, your reaction to that?
So I would just say in the last round of tax cuts, what that meant to the average Utah family was about $8 a month. When you think about what those dollars can do, if we're talking about investing in affordable childcare, the housing crisis, ending homelessness in the state, that is money that can be better spent collectively if we make good choices about investing in our communities. That is not, to me, a great idea, but I would love to see the sales tax go away on food.
She's right. She's right on her script there.
Yeah, I pushed for, I was a champion of the 4% flat tax, didn't get that. So anything that inches it down, I think is a good thing. And I come from the perspective, I would rather put money back in people's pockets for them to choose to spend rather than for the government to spend.
Yeah, interesting. You know, and I come from the standpoint of it's a really uncertain economy. And I think this is a really good year to be really careful with those public funds. And I'd be looking at some places to put money that you can hold on to in case we have some choppy waters ahead. So that's just my quick take on it. Hey, it's been a great conversation. I'm happy to have learned so much from my two friends, John Dougal and Shireen Gourbani. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. Anthony Scoma produces the program. Thanks for listening.